This is NHL Radio.
Time now for NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Home Ice.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the NHL Hour. Gary Bettman here alongside Bill Clement. And we are coming to you from the NHL store powered by Reebok in New York City. For those of you who haven't been here, I suggest you come. It's worth a look. And the call-in number is 1-877-645-6696. That's 1-877-645-6696. We're going to take your calls, as we always do, and we'll be joined later by the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, Mr. Ken Holland. Mr. Clement, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
What's new? I've been having a very low-key, boring week. So.
I was going to say, not as much in my life as yours. A lot of great playoffs to watch. Right. I mean, every series at 2-1. I mean, it can't get much better than what we've got right now.
The games have been absolutely terrific. We'll talk about that in a minute. Let me start with one thing I want to talk about. I guess that's one of the benefits of having your own radio show. You can talk about what you want, and I know this is on a lot of people's minds, so let me address it right away, and then we can chit-chat about all the things we usually talk about and take our calls. The two most important issues for any sports league are who owns its franchises and where its clubs are located. And the NHL, like the other sports leagues, has clear rules, policies, and procedures to deal with those two issues. The issue in Phoenix deals simply with who owns and controls the franchise and where the franchise will be located. Today, in about 30 minutes, we are in bankruptcy court in Arizona for what we believe will be a preliminary proceeding, most likely to set the schedule of things to take place with the Coyotes. As commissioner of the NHL, my role is to enforce the league rules, policies, and procedures for the good of the clubs, the health of the league, and the support of our fans. I will do the right thing and apply the rules as they have always been applied. In the final analysis, what we do is all about, really, our fans. Our fans play an essential role in all the decisions that we make. You support our clubs, and we have a commitment to you. We don't run out on our fans when issues arise with our clubs. We fix the problems. And our track record of fixing clubs is pretty strong. The Pittsburgh Penguins are a good example of this, and now they are thriving. And over the years, there have been others, Buffalo, Ottawa, and at least two other Canadian teams. We owe it to our fans and the game to enforce our rules and follow our processes and our procedures. It's really no more complicated than that. And so, while my guess is people are going to want to talk about it, and I'm going to have to be somewhat circumspect with things that are before the court, the fact is we've got a league and we've got rules, and in the absence of the rules and their enforceability, we in any sports league couldn't exist. It's that simple.
But lots to be determined, obviously.
That's right. And my understanding, just to add a note of, I suppose some will find it newsworthy, in the proceedings, I believe the debtor, which is Jerry Moyes' companies, have now sought a declaration in bankruptcy court. I haven't seen the papers that our rules violate the antitrust laws.
So, the NHL's rules.
Yeah, the NHL's rules. So, you know, we will deal with it. You know, I much prefer focusing on the games and growing the business and interacting with our fans than having to dust off my law degree.
Yeah, really.
Although I don't go back, despite what my lawyers say, I don't go back and practice law. We've got a terrific group of lawyers, very talented, very hardworking, representing the league, and we will deal with this. And to me, I just hope it's not a distraction for our fans. Focus on what's going on the ice. We'll deal with what goes on in the courtroom, and we'll move on from there.
And I'm sure your desire and everybody's is to end up with things resolved in as timely a fashion as possible.
There's no question about that. You know, it's all the uncertainty isn't fair to anyone, although there are complicated and serious issues that the courts are going to have to deal with. But anyway, let's move on from there.
Let me shout out the number one more time, Gary. 877-645-6696. We'd love to chat with you. 877-645-6696.
So how are you liking the Washington-Pittsburgh series?
I'm trying to figure out what it's missing.
You know,
and I haven't come up with anything yet.
You know what?
Maybe a triple overtime game.
3-1 goal games. I mean, the skill level, the speed, the hits. I mean, it is incredible.
And the two marquee names have done everything they could possibly do, Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin, to help their teams. They're both functioning at 100% of their potential. And that's what, I mean, you often see a series with a star player on one side that just doesn't seem to be getting the job done. That cannot be said.
Well, but it's interesting is when a star player doesn't get the job done, the other team's shutting him down somehow.
Yeah.
But you know what? What we're doing is stars are being stars. That's what we're seeing. I mean, Crosby, 8 goals, 14 points in 9 games. Ovechkin, 8 goals, 13 points in 10 games. Getzlaff, 14 points in 9 games. Stahl, 7 goals in 10 games, including the series winner against New Jersey. Scott Niedermeyer for Anaheim, 2 game-winning goals. Luongo, a sub-2 goals against average and a .935 save percentage. It is wild.
It's all good. And some new names, too, that are getting the highest save percentage is Jonas Hiller of the Ducks. So there are some, you know, new names that are making names for themselves, new players. So it's all good. I mean, you can't wait. It's the time of year where, and the entertainment has been so compelling that you just can't wait for the games to come on.
Well, and also the unpredictability. Who would think that somebody named Hiller would be filling in for Jaguar if Anaheim were to be making a run? That's obviously a testament to the Anaheim organization.
Yep.
And the depth that they have. And also what's interesting is, you know, the referees are calling penalties in the third period. Penalties have been called in overtime.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen lots of games where lead changes or deficits made up in the third period, last-minute victories. You know, 7 of 12 games so far in the conference semis have been one-goal games, including, obviously, we talked about all 3 in Pittsburgh, Washington, and in the Anaheim-Detroit series. Boston erased a 1-goal lead in the third last night to send the game into overtime. Pittsburgh took the lead with 4:59 left. Washington tied it with 1:50 left. And then overtime, you know, was just wild for about half a period. Lidstrom won game one for Detroit versus Anaheim with a goal with 50 seconds left in regulation. Red Wings came back from a goal down in the third to send game two into overtime. I mean, just goes on and on and on. And the buildings, our fans in the buildings have been incredible. It's just, you know, it's what playoff hockey is all about. It's what we've been building for and towards, not just this season, but since we came back from the work stoppage with what we believed would be an improved game and a more entertaining product. Ratings are up all over the place. More coverage, you know, on the NHL Network, NHL.com, NHL Radio. You know, we have the Cisco All Access pregame show. We've got NHL Live. I know, I'm doing all these promotions. But it's all good.
It is all good. I guess we could have assumed that the ratings, what drives ratings is not only the matchups, and we've got marquee matchups everywhere you look, whether it's Anaheim and Detroit in the West, or Pittsburgh and Washington in the East. But markets, you know, the Boston Bruins are back in the game, in the playoff game. The Chicago Blackhawks back in the playoff game. So I guess it stands to reason that ratings would be doing pretty well based on the markets and based on the matchups.
But you know what? More than the matchups, more than the markets, it's what's taking place on the ice. And the games are compelling.
Compelling,
they're exciting.
Mm-hmm.
They're entertaining. They're skillful. They're fast. They're hard-hitting. All the things we want. So let's talk about tonight. We have 2 pivotal game fours in the Western Conference. Vancouver takes a 2-1 series lead back to Chicago for an 8 p.m. Eastern Time faceoff. Versus and CBC have the coverage. And defending Stanley Cup champion Detroit is at Anaheim at 10:30 Eastern Time. And they're going to attempt to even that series at two games apiece. Versus and TSN do the honors.
RDS, too, right? On both of those? I believe
yes,
RDS
yes.
has coverage for French Canada.
I was getting to that.
Okay.
But that's okay.
It's all right.
And tomorrow.
Got to
do
something over here.
No, you're doing. You're keeping the seat warm. Were you here earlier today as well?
Yeah, I've been keeping the seat warm for a few hours.
But you were tired. I'm trying to take it easy on you. At your advanced age, I don't want to have you worn out. And since this is your third hour on the air, you know, I don't want to tax you too
much.
Put
me in, Coach. I'm ready.
Yes, you are. You always are. Tomorrow night, Eastern Conference is back. Washington, with a 2-1 series lead, is in Pittsburgh for a 7 p.m. Eastern start on Versus CBC and RDS. And Boston tries to rebound and even the series in Carolina. They're at 7:30 Eastern Time with TSN broadcasting in Canada and Versus joining in progress in the United States. So there we have it. You know, it's easier to keep track of the schedule when we don't have 15 games on a given night. And on that note, why don't we go to the board and start taking calls? Jeff from Philadelphia, you are up. This is the NHL Hour with Bill Clement and me, Gary.
Hi, gentlemen. Mr. Bettman, I have a question. I'm a long-time Philadelphia Flyers season ticket holder. I grew up in Bill's era when it was really hockey. It was all about hockey. And now it looks like the league is making, whether consciously or subconsciously, a concerted effort to draw new fans to the game by increasing your scoring through the increased penalty calls. Now, I think it's about 35% of the goals in playoffs up to date have been scored at special teams. To me, you know, while that may be exciting, hockey's not designed to be played 5-on-4, you know, for that much of the game. I mean, you're taking the skill. There's guys that Bill played for that a Hall of Famers have played with, rather, that wouldn't even be able to make it in the NHL today because of the changes that have been made. But I just, you know, would like your comment on that.
You know, I understand what you're saying, and I respect it, and I hate to disagree with a fan, but I disagree with you for the following reasons. Penalty calls were down this year compared to last year. Power plays were down. And, in fact, power play goals were down. Even strength goals are what's up. In order to open up the game for speed and skill players, not letting clutching and grabbing and hooking and holding stop players from having scoring chances using their skill, you've got to have a standard of officiating that takes that stuff out of the game. And is consistent. And we think it's remarkable how quickly the players and the officials have adjusted. I mean, this was a fundamental change to the game in a very short period of time. But the game is better for it. And while you may say, you know, a free hand on somebody's shoulder or a stick horizontal and a slight tug is a cheap penalty, the fact is, if it costs you a step as the skater trying to get into the offensive zone, you're probably breaking up a scoring chance. And we're not overcalling the games. We're constantly monitoring and supervising the officials. And I think everybody's adjusted very, very well to it.
I seem to remember killing 5 to 7 penalties a game in my era. There were with the Flyers, right?
You know,
there,
by the way,
there were quite a few of those.
Especially you.
I lived on PK. And it's not about the goal scoring anyway for me. It's about the entertainment value. And there has to be the greatest aspect of our sport is the speed, the skating speed. And when you have that from end to end, 5-on-5, then you've got something special, and that's what we have now.
And we have more lead changes. We have more come-from-behind attempts, and successful some of them. You know, the fact is, I think it's you know, in any given game, you can look at any given call or non-call and have a problem with it, but you've got to look at the full body of work. And if you look at our game since coming back from the work stoppage, it has gotten stronger and stronger and better and better. And that's a testament to the way the players are playing and the way the officials are officiating. Why don't we go to Mike in Michigan? You're on Sirius XM 208, 204, Bill and Gary, And someday they'll give me the same number and I won't get as confused. How you doing, Mike?
Good. How are you guys doing today?
We're okay. What's going on?
I understand the league has instant replay.
Correct.
During the games. And I know why. They want to get the calls right during the games in certain situations. My call is basically about the game Tuesday night in
yep.
Anaheim. And I want to figure out why. Why is it replays are only called during the game on called goals and not on a play in a situation like that where the league has the opportunity to actually get it correct?
By the way, that's a fair question. And the answer is if you try to use replay for too much in a game that has as much nonstop action as we do, the game will take 4 hours and you'll never get it right. And quite frankly, on virtually everything that happens, the referee, if he's in position, has the best look at what's going on. And camera angles can sometimes distort it. By being very discreet and specific as to how we use replay, did the puck get in the net? Was there a distinct, did it cross the line and actually go in? Was there a distinct kicking motion? Was there a high stick? There are a whole variety of specific things. Was the goal, the net dislodged before the puck went in? Was the puck directed or batted into net by a hand or foot? To establish the correct time, had time expired? All of these things are very discreet and we can control and we know what we're looking at. If you're going to start using replay on whether or not the referee who believed he lost sight of the puck and then was attempting to blow the whistle when the puck went in anyway, then you're going to have to back it up. And was it offsides or was there an illegal check or a trip somewhere else down the ice? You can't use it for too much. This is a game of action, of speed, and of mistakes. And we hold the officials accountable. We try to keep these mistakes to a minimum. But in the final analysis, you can't let technology take over what, in essence, are judgment calls. And we try to use video replay only for things that are crystal clear relating to the scoring of a goal.
I can't agree more on the use of video replay. What about having the ref in this particular case when the puck apparently is frozen? In that case, it wasn't frozen, but Hiller thought it was, and Brad Watson, the ref, thought it was. What about having the refs make sure that they delay long enough or a second longer, a second and a half longer, to make sure? Because the attacking players will signal you whether the puck is free or not.
Right. We'll do that, and then the team trying to score a goal will be whacking the goaltender with their stick, and then we're going to get an injured goaltender, and people are going to say he waited too long to blow the whistle. The rule is, and they're not supposed to guess, you lose sight of the puck, you blow the whistle. The second part of the rule is, when you blow the... Listen, it takes time once your head says, less than a second, your head says, got to blow the whistle. You move it from your hand to your mouth to blow the whistle. When in your mind you are to blow the whistle, the fact that there's a slight
sure.
delay.
I agree with that. You know, I understand that.
And that's all that happened here. And there he lost sight of the puck and he thought it was frozen. Can't do anything more than that. Otherwise, you're going to create a whole host of situations that you didn't anticipate the other way. We want our officials to be right 100% of the time. That's the way the play has been called for as long as anybody can remember. It's not like Detroit was singled out or there was a particular something new here. This is the way it's been done forever. And, you know, it is what it is. It's part of playing the game. Jake from Pennsylvania, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM.
Hey, Gary, how's it going?
We're doing okay. What about you?
Pretty good. I'm just enjoying the playoffs. It sounds like you guys are, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Great year. My question is how the scheduling works between the TV scheduling for the teams, because Carolina got 2 days off, and now Friday, Saturday, it looks like Washington and Pittsburgh have to play back-to-back.
And the reason that they're playing back-to-back in that series is because, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, there was a period of either 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4 days when the Pittsburgh building wasn't available in this series. And in order to accommodate all of our broadcasters nationally and to give a fair schedule, we had no other way to do this. Had the Pittsburgh building been available and had less blocked dates, I don't know, I think Yanni's in there for 3 nights, we would have been able to schedule differently. But in the final analysis, the building wasn't available on the times that we needed it.
I still can't believe Yanni's that big, you know, to be able to book any building for three nights. But that's just one man's opinion. Well, Neil Young, I'd go and see.
Me too. By the way, opening with Cinnamon Girl, you know.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Me too. Is that your choice?
No.
I'll take credit for it.
No, I was a little preoccupied today and yesterday, so I didn't get to focus on the musical selections.
We understand.
But I think everybody here kind of knows my taste by now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they do it kind of understanding what I might do had I focused on it.
We get it. And we get the fact that the callers are extremely valuable to us and extremely patient. We ask you to stay on hold. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be chatting with the esteemed general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Holland, on the NHL Hour.
This is Eric Staal of the Carolina Hurricanes, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back to the NHL Hour. Eric Staal's having a pretty good playoff.
Think? Whoa.
You know?
He's got it ratcheted up.
He really does. It was fun when we had his dad on, what was it, about 2-3 weeks ago, when all three Staal brothers who were in the NHL were playing on the same night. You know, as a parent, you know, I can't even imagine what that. I'm proud of my kids, and they've all done great things. But to have three, you know, professional athletes all playing at the same time,
I can only imagine what it was like being Mr. or Mrs. Sutter.
Ha ha! Why are you laughing?
Well, I mean, you're torn, and you know, you sit there, and how can you root? I mean, where are your emotions? There are only a handful of people that have ever lived that can relate to the feeling that those parents have.
Well, I was giving the upbeat analysis. You were giving conflict and emotional scorn.
I was.
Yes, you
now
were.
I was attempting to underreact. It's really interesting that you were able to read emotional scorn in there.
Well, the difference
now is, you're hearing emotional scorn.
Except the difference is, unlike everybody else listening to us, I'm looking at you. Okay, on the line is Ken Holland, the Detroit Red Wings general manager. Ken has been in the Red Wings front office since 1985. Gee, he doesn't look that old, and has been the club's general manager since 1997. He is one of the most innovative and aggressive general managers in the NHL, and Detroit's Stanley Cup victory in 2008 was the team's third under his leadership. He was in his third year as the club's assistant general manager when it won the first of its four recent cups in 97. He's led the Wings to four President's Trophies and to an NHL record 9 straight 100-point seasons. And the Red Wings also qualified this spring for the Stanley Cup playoffs for the 18th consecutive season, the longest active streak among major pro sports. So, Ken, welcome.
Thanks, Gary. Nice to be with you and Bill.
Good. You like that build-up? So let me take it one step further. You've made the playoffs, the Wings have, with you at the helm, in every one of your 11 seasons as general manager, and you've had your team through the first round into the conference semifinals for the 8th time. How do you do it, and does it ever get old?
No, it does never get old. I think, we've been lucky with drafting some late round picks that have, you know, two guys in particular, Zetterberg and Datsyuk, that have turned out to be two of the top forwards and two-way forwards in the game, not only great offensive players, but just as good and maybe even better defensively. And then been fortunate that I think we've had the best defenseman of his era in Nick Lidstrom, who at 39 years of age continues to, he's up for the Norris Trophy, and when you've got a dominant player at an important position, I think it's been a real advantage. And then obviously Jimmy Neal and the staff have done a tremendous job of drafting. I think we've got the best owners in the National Hockey League, and everything was in place, and we've just had to figure out a way to keep it going.
Well, you've managed to keep it going, and in fact, you've been able to keep the core of the team together throughout this terrific run. But given the constraints of the salary cap and where you were before the work stoppage and after, how did you manage to keep it all together and make those adjustments and go from being one of the higher payroll teams to a team that had to come down and comply with the cap?
Well, you know, when we went into the work stoppage, Gary, I mean, obviously we knew coming out that that we didn't have a lot of time left for, you know, Sergei Fedorov had left. We knew Steve Yzerman was nearing the end. And shortly in, Robert Lang left. Brendan Shanahan chose to leave. And we ended up bringing in either some young kids, like we talked about Zetterberg and Datsuk and Cronwell, dropped guys like Val Filippula, Johan Franzen in the third round, that Yuri Hudler, that have turned out to be good players. And then, you know, when we come out of the work stoppage, we have to let some players go. Darian Hatcher, Darren McCarty, Ray Whitney, to free up some space. And then we were looking for some players that were looking for a home. And Mark Howe and his staff did a great job in identifying players like Dan Cleary, who was looking for a tryout, Andreas Lilja. We've brought some players back that we knew. We brought Chris Osgood back in goal. We brought Dominic Kask back in goal. And we've just been able to sort of stay afloat. I mean, it's the system now is designed for competitive balance, and you're in a one-goal game every night. And I think the character and the culture of our team over the last 10, 12, 13 years, you know, we go into the game expecting to win. And I think a lot of nights sometimes you're expecting to win, and maybe the team that you're playing as a younger team is kind of going hoping to win, and sometimes that history, that tradition swings a win your way.
You know, you mentioned a number of the players who have been on the roster and are the core of the team who are not from North America. What's your philosophy in terms of how to develop a player who you've drafted from Europe, and how have you been able to operate in the absence of a transfer agreement that enables the players to flow perhaps as freely as they used to?
Well, you know, with all the European players, I guess, you know, I was fortunate to work with Scotty Bowman in the mid-90s. You know, when Scotty came in, we had some great young players that were great regular season players, and we, as an organization, we hadn't learned how to win. And Scotty made some moves to bring in Slava Fetisov, who was a 36-year-old defenseman who was sitting in the press box in New Jersey. He traded to acquire Igor Larionov, and he put together the Russian Five, and we started to play a European style of hockey, and I think that we had success, and then we won the championship in 97 and 98, and at the end of the day, we don't really care about the passport. We just care, does the player play hard? Does he have character? Does he play a style of game that fits into what you're trying to do? And I think that, you know, that group of players through 2002, you know, the veteran players, they eventually, most of them have left us, and then we've kind of continued to go with that philosophy in the draft, in the free agent signing, in whatever trades that we're making. We try to bring in those style of players that fit our system with no real emphasis on where you're from. We just want players to play our style of hockey, and because we've been able to be a competitive team, we've been able to tuck players away. I played 9 years in the American Hockey League as a minor league goaltender, and I have tremendous respect for the American League and the job it does in developing young players. And then I work with Scotty Bowman, who likes veteran players and reinforces to me as a young executive that the NHL is the toughest and best league in the world. And when you get to the NHL, you better be prepared to be mentally strong and physically strong if you want to carve out a good career. And the longer we can leave players in the American Hockey League, I guess between my philosophy and also the success of our organization, I think has been, you know, the reason we've been able to maybe draft some late and you put them away and all of a sudden you wake up and they're players. Jimmy Neal, Håkan Andersson, and Joe McDaniel, who are three key decision makers, have done a tremendous job in identifying young players later in the draft.
You had mentioned your own hockey career as a player. You were a goaltender. We checked the official guide and record book, and according to it, you appeared in four games for Hartford and Detroit going 0-2-1 and allowing 17 goals. So I have two questions.
Yeah.
So 17 goals and no wins in four games? And what is it that you remember about your debut?
Well, I can remember my debut like it was yesterday. I played about 6 years in the American Hockey League, and I was in the Hartford Whaler organization. I remember getting called up to Hartford. We played on a Saturday night at home against the Washington Capitals. John Garrett, who's now on CBC, was the other goaltender. He played Saturday night. I think we got beat like 7-2 or 7-3 at home. We bussed over to New York on Saturday night, and Sunday we played in Madison Square Garden, and about an hour and a half before the game, I remember the assistant coach, I think at the time was Larry Polk, came and said that the head coach, Don Blackburn, wanted to see me in the back room. And I went in the back room. I was half-dressed, and he asked me if I felt about how would I feel about playing. And my heart started pumping 100 miles an hour, and I said, I'm ready to go. And he threw me in. I remember it was 1-0 after the first period, and they had 15, 16 shots. And I thought, boy, I'm here. I belong here. And in the second period, they had 21 shots and scored 5 goals, and we were down 6-1 after 2 periods, and then the second intermission, I'm saying to myself, I'm never going to get back to the National Hockey League again, so enjoy the third. It's my 15 seconds of fame in the spotlight. I can remember Nick Fatio taking a wrist shot in the middle of the third period and breaking a pane of glass, and I thought to myself, this is going to buy me an extra 10 minutes of fame. And fortunate that I've made it, been around the NHL as long as I have, so every day's a bonus.
You know, talking about being a goaltender, you've won cups both by going with a guy like Chris Osgood, who is perpetually underappreciated, and then by going out and getting a legendary player in Dominik Hasek, although later in his career. Take us through your thoughts as a former goaltender as to why each fit at that time the needs of the Red Wings and was able to rise to a level that could deliver you a championship.
Well, obviously, these guys, in the old league, we were one of the highest payroll teams in the league, and when we lost in the first round to LA in 2001, we felt we needed to do something with some impact to our team, and I ended up getting a call in the middle of June from Darcy Regier saying that Buffalo was going to move Dominik Hasek. Were we interested? Absolutely. And we went through a process and eventually made a trade to acquire Dominik Hasek. We signed him to a one-year contract with I think two or three one-year options after. And as it turned out, we won the Cup. Dominik retired in 2002 after we won the Stanley Cup. We went out and we then signed a high-profile goaltender, Curtis Joseph. And a year later, Dominik decided to come back out of retirement. And we ended up with two high-profile goaltenders that didn't really work, and then Dominik ended up going to Ottawa. So you come out of the work stoppage because we've got some salary constraints. I'm looking to go as cheap as I possibly can in some areas, and one of the areas was in goal. I'd love to be able to have one of the top four or five goaltenders in the league and put a lot of money into that position, but if you don't have it, you got to look for alternatives. And coming out of the work stoppage, we brought Chris Osgood back. He was looking for work. He had been in the island, been in St. Louis, was looking for work. I've known him since he's been 17 years of age. I was the chief scout when we drafted him. I lived in Medicine for 10 years. He played for the Medicine Tigers, so I've known Chris really good. And we had Manny Legacy, and we lost Edmonton in the first round, and Manny Legacy was in goal. We made a decision. We wanted to shake it up again, and Dominik Hasek was looking for another chance, and we brought Dom back. And Dom and Chris Osgood gave us two great years. We lost in the conference final to the Ducks in 07 with Dom in goal, and in 08 we started out with Dom in goal, and all of a sudden Mike Babcock made a switch early in the first series against Nashville and went to Chris Osgood, and we went on and won the Stanley Cup. So, I knew these guys. We had a history with these guys. And we brought back a lot of older players through the years. Darren McCarty, Igor Larionov, I brought back a couple of times. I think when you know the person, it's much easier to bring them back when you know their character.
Last spring, Nicklas Lidström became the first European-born captain to hoist the Stanley Cup. Zetterberg was the first non-North American to win the Conn Smythe. Pavel Datsyuk is a finalist for the Hart Memorial Trophy. What does that say to you about your team, your players, and how you've put it all together?
You know, we've, I mean, first off, they're world-class players. You know, I'm around them every day. They've got tremendous talent, but I think more so they've got tremendous determination, tremendous will, lots and lots of character. And you know, going into the playoffs last year, you know, people were wondering if this European-based team could go on a playoff run. And there's always questions about our toughness. And at the end of the day, when you win the Stanley Cup, like our players were able to do last year, they've been challenged and they responded. I think it answers to their character. So, you know, again, Nick Lidstrom, I think he's one of the three or four greatest defensemen to ever play the game in the NHL. He's somebody that you appreciate more when you watch him every day, because if you watch him one game, he's not a guy that's going to go up and down the ice and do these exciting end-to-end rushes. He's just really efficient. He never makes a mistake. He's always in position. He's got incredible patience with the puck, and I don't think we've ever missed the playoffs with Nick Lidstrom in our lineup, you know, we're so lucky that we've had him. And then the other two young kids, like you talked, Zetterberg and Datsyuk. You know, I think they come into our organization, and for us, they played on the same team as Steve Yzerman. You know, I mean, 2002, when we played Colorado in the third round, we brought Zetterberg and his parents over to watch a couple of playoff games, and then when Jimmy and I were talking to him and his parents, he mentioned that his favorite player was Igor Larionov. And Jimmy and I thought it was important to keep Igor Larionov around for another year or two as a mentor to Pavel Datsyuk, because we didn't have a lot of Russian players at that point in time, and as a mentor to Henrik Zetterberg. And I think when young players are mentored by real pros like Steve Yzerman and Igor Larionov, and then, you know, obviously with Chelios and Nick Lidstrom, they learn how to be pros, they learn how to compete, they learn how to practice, they learn how to mentally prepare, and they've slowly developed into world-class players.
We're talking to Ken Holland, the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. Before I let you go, I want to talk for a couple of minutes about your series with Anaheim. Were you surprised that a lower seed beat the President Trophy winner San Jose Sharks? And what are you thinking about your series right now?
Well, I wasn't surprised at a lower seed. I think once you make the playoffs, I think you can almost throw those seeds in the garbage, just because there's so little to choose between the teams. We were the top seed, I think, in 06 when we lost Edmonton in the first round. So, you know, and a lot of these teams, the lower seeds, they've been playing playoff hockey for 1 and 2 months, and the higher seeds, you've taken your, you're not trying to, but you've taken your foot off the gas a little bit, and all of a sudden you got to get revved up. So, and on top of that, Anaheim is a team that, you know, the Beauchemin, 20-plus minute defenseman, has been out all year. They made some moves at the deadline, so they're much better than an 8 seed to begin with. So nothing surprises me in the NHL, you know, we knew coming into this series, Anaheim's a real proud team. They've got lots of character. They've won the Stanley Cup, beat us in the third round in 07. We knew that we were going to have our hands full. We expected a long series. We expected a tight series. And I think to this point in time, we've really got what we expected. We think that in all three games, they've been better early in the games. And as the games have wore on, we've been better late. But we've got behind, and the other night, Hiller was outstanding in game three. We've got to get off to a better start tonight, and we've got to put 60 minutes together instead of trying to get sneaked by with 40 minutes.
Ken, thanks for joining us. Wish you and the Red Wings good luck, and we'll see you at the rink.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you. That was Ken Holland, general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. Detroit versus Anaheim, 10:30 p.m. tonight Eastern Time, versus TSN, RDS, and XM 205.
877-645-6696. We will step out, and anxious to get back to your calls when we return to the NHL Hour right after this.
Into the old apartment, just to where we used to live.
Hi, this is Sidney Crosby, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you're listening to NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back to the NHL Hour. Bill Clement, Gary Bettman, and Sidney Crosby momentarily, although I think he's a little preoccupied this week doing other things.
That's why we're guessing that was taped and not live.
I think.
Just a guess.
You know, you're pretty good on that stuff. Why don't we go to the callers? Jared from Alberta has been holding on for the better part of 40 minutes. Jared, you're on with Bill and Gary. Thank you for holding on today. We're okay. What about you?
I was just going to say, Gary, I think you're a wonderful commissioner and a really brilliant verse speaker. I love to hear you talk, and I love to hear you go head to head with Ron McLean. I think it's wonderful.
Thank you.
Anyway, and also, I was just going to, a little off topic, I just want to ask Bill if there's a contact info or an email address that he corresponds with at all.
Go ahead, Bill. The world wants to know.
Yeah, there is.
Do you have Facebook, Twitter? Answer the question.
Yeah, well, I just am reluctant to sort of throw out my email address on the air.
Why?
You know, I mean, we'll put you on hold. How about this? I'll give you my email address if you'd like to contact me as soon as we finish with the call. How's that?
That's awesome, Bill. Thank you so much. I got a couple of things to talk about. I talked to you earlier on NHL Live also.
Oh, okay.
That's great.
Good. What can we do for you other than get you Bill's email address?
Well, I was just wondering, where do you think in southern Ontario that the rinks will be? Like, where do you think they'll have the, if they do, they probably won't transfer Phoenix, but if they did, where would you think that it would reside, like in what areas?
I have no idea because it's nothing that we've studied. You know, my own view is if you're going to start a new franchise in a new place, You want a new building, so whatever. If we ever go, and again, we're not looking to relocate. We're not expanding at this point, in case people hadn't noticed there's a recession going on. But I assume at some point somebody, if we ever get to that point, would have a plan for us to look at as to where to build an arena. But it's not something we've ever studied. I think there are people out there who have this notion that we've gone through this in-depth study and we've got a list of where we want to go. We've done nothing of the sort. We're concentrating on having 30 healthy franchises where they are. You only move a franchise as an absolute last resort. At least that's my view of the world and how we should be applying our rules. But again, we're in the middle of a fairly complex matter on that subject. Why don't we go to our next caller, which is David in Boston. David, you're on with Bill and Gary.
Hi, Commissioner. Hi, Bill. How are you today?
We're good. How are you?
Well, I'm getting a little nervous here about my Bruins going down 2-1 last night, but
it was a very close, exciting game.
Yeah, I just think the Bruins are still a little bit haven't taken it into high gear yet, like you know they have in the regular season.
Although I would suggest some credit is due to Carolina and
oh, absolutely.
And Ward is playing fabulously.
Absolutely. Which leads into my next subway about really tying in with the Phoenix Coyotes situation. The whole notion, and I do have to agree with you on this one, Commissioner, that hockey doesn't work in the South is, if I may quote you on this, is hogwash.
Did I say that?
It sounds like something I
should have said, and if I didn't.
I thought I remember reading that or seeing that on ESPN.com or one of those channels.
The only reason I'm the least bit skeptical is hogwash isn't a word I use a lot, but that's okay. The point I agree with.
You know, just watching the fans in Raleigh last night, you know, with the tailgating and the whole excitement. The whole issue is bringing a winning team to a market. If you have a losing product, I don't care where you are.
By the way, you're absolutely right. You know, you talk about Carolina. I remember Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final against Edmonton. It's the first professional sporting event that I could recall either being at or knowing about where the fans stood the entire game. But your point about a product needs credibility. Listen, you know, Chicago is a very good example of a place where the team wasn't doing particularly well. And if you just focused on how they were doing at a point in time, you'd say, well, get rid of them and move them, which would have been absurd. And there have been lots of other places we've been involved in. You know, our attendance, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, before we had expansion to the Sun Belt, I think we were probably doing 14 million people a year. We're now doing 22 million people a year at the gate, coming. Lots and lots of people going. When you look at a team anywhere whose attendance is suffering, you generally take a look at how they've performed, not just in a particular year. You look over time, and there tends to be a correlation. You know, a franchise needs to be well-run, and when a franchise isn't well-run, it doesn't mean necessarily that the market can't or won't support it. It simply means the franchise hasn't been well-run, and if you get new ownership and new management, things can change. I think the caller's points were very well taken. Why don't we go to Dan in Washington, D.C.? Dan, you're on with Bill Gary, Sirius XM 208-204.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thanks for an entertaining and informative program. I always enjoy it.
Thank you for listening.
Want to touch on two quick things. First, I've been a Caps fan since those ignominious days when Bill Clement doffed the red, white, and blue. And I'm not too concerned about them being able to take care of business with the Penguins. I think they're looking pretty good. But one thing that does concern me is what appears to be an apparent double standard that is applied in supplemental discipline because of referring specifically to Chris Kunitz's cross-check to the throat of Semyon Varlamov the other night. You specifically had said that you wanted to address two specific things: shots to the head, and messages sent late in a game. Now, I don't know if it qualifies as a message-sending thing, but it was certainly a shot to the head. The league acknowledged there was some malfeasance there. They issued a fine. He apologized in the press, and he admitted that looking at it in slow motion, it looked bad. How does that not warrant a one-game suspension?
Well, that's a fair question, and I think when you look In the entirety of the context, just because something deserves a penalty, it always doesn't rise to the level of a suspension. We look at the total context, time of game, situation, the act, the result of the act. Was there an injury?
The history of the player.
The history of the player, you whether or not he's a repeat offender. You know, I could probably go through instances, because I had this conversation with Coley Campbell the other night. There were probably two or three times during the season where Washington Capitol players did things to a player. Something is ringing in my mind about a Tampa Bay game where a player did something and everybody was screaming the Cap player should be suspended, and we didn't do it. Just because the act deserves a penalty, particularly if the penalty wasn't called appropriately, doesn't mean it results in a suspension. We take it very seriously. We're not looking to take players out of the game. We're looking to make sure the conduct is at a certain level. And, you know, we don't have a horse in the race. We don't root. Coley Campbell looks at each act and decides, is this something that warrants supplemental discipline? I think he wanted to make clear to Kunitz that you can't do this. You do it again, you're going to get suspended. But it didn't deserve a suspension going forward. I mean, that's, you know, and people are going to disagree on that. But we did acknowledge that it's something that deserved a penalty and deserved to be a fine. Let's go to Paul in Virginia. You're on with Bill and Gary, Sirius XM.
Thanks for taking my call. I've been enjoying hockey since the days before the Islanders made their cup run. So it's been good.
We're having a static problem. Can you turn your head? Oh, we got cut off. Sorry about that. Must have been a bad cell phone. Let's go to Chris in Baltimore. You're on with Bill and Gary, Sirius XM.
Good morning, Gary. Good morning, Bill. How you doing?
Where are you that it's the morning?
I am. Well, I work a word shift.
Oh, okay. So,
it's your morning.
I knew there had to be an explanation for this, because while I had a busy day and I wasn't sure what time it was, I didn't think it was morning. I thought I had lunch.
Well, it's always great to be able to stay up and watch the West Coast games because they come on so late.
I agree.
But I had the same problem Dan in Washington, D.C. had, and that to use a football analogy, which I really hate to do as far as hockey goes, but the goaltender is one of the most important people on the ice. And just concerning the history of the Washington Capitals and these playoffs so far in round one and round two, you can see the importance of Varlamov to the Washington Capitals and, of course, their fans. And it's just incomprehensible that a player is allowed to lay a stick on another player's neck with enough force to shift him over against his throat. And, I mean, you know how delicate people are. It could have caused death.
It could have caused an injury, but it didn't.
And I think that the league needs to make a hard line, stance that any above the head, above the shoulders stick contact is instant one gamer, without a doubt. No matter what happens, no ifs, ands, buts, whys, or was.
Wait a minute. Let's pause for a second. And what if it's judged that Alexander Ovechkin is losing his balance and winds up cross-checking somebody in the neck? I mean, when you apply hard and fast rules like that, you get more injustice than you get justice.
You have to, though, especially.
I'm
on his knees trying to do his job, trying to keep track of the puck. He's not paying attention to what's going on around him. And a player comes up,
and I understand your outrage, and I understand you being protective of your goaltender, being a Caps fan.
It's not my goaltender; it's everybody's goaltender, and it's the perception of the league by non-fans. I have most of my neighborhood watching the Washington Capitals now because I'm a fan, and I'm loud and proud about it. And they all come to me and say, "How is that guy not suspended for taking a stick to the guy's neck?"
It should be a penalty, and he was fined for it.
Been suspended.
Well, but that's
a mockery of me personally and my league, because I own part of the NHL every time I go to a game.
We are nothing without our fans. I agree with you completely.
It makes a mockery of my league if something. Remuneration doesn't happen besides the $2,500.
Listen, we're always going to have disagreements on supplemental discipline, how much is warranted, whether or not any is warranted, and we, Coley Campbell, who I think does a terrific job, has great deal of experience. I have complete confidence in him, and he makes these decisions, and I think he makes good decisions. And particularly when you have a rooting interest, it doesn't always satisfy you one way or the other. But, yes, I agree with the premise that we are nothing without our fans, and we work very hard to connect with our fans and satisfy you that we're doing the best we can day in and day out. Let's take Alex in Montreal. Alex, are you there? Good. We only have a couple of minutes, so try to make it fast, and we'll try and answer your question. You're on with Bill and Gary.
I want to talk about the Phoenix Coyotes right now, and you were saying that you don't want them to move, or what was that all about?
Well, I think if before any team can move, before any new owner can come into the league, you have to go through a league process. We think the Coyotes can work and belong in Arizona. Okay, next caller, we'll take Jeff in Ontario. You're on with Bill and Gary, and we'll have to make it quick. Go ahead, you're up.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Gary. How are you guys today?
Good, but we only have a minute left, so that gives you about 10 seconds to ask your question.
All right, I'll touch on one thing quick. Have you considered at all going back to the divisional format of coming out of the playoffs, maybe a 7 and an 8? And I think maybe Sidney Crosby wouldn't like to hear this, but if you ended up with Washington and Pittsburgh in the same division, we could watch Ovechkin versus Crosby for the next decade every year.
The answer is we haven't thought about it because the league's so competitive and conference-based playoffs have had incredible regular season races going down the stretch. Under the old system, teams were done in February.
That'll do it for another NHL Hour. Thanks to all the callers. Thanks to Ken Holland as well, the GM of the Detroit Red Wings. Vancouver, Chicago tonight at 8 Eastern. Detroit and Anaheim at 10:30 Eastern. Enjoy your week of hockey. Phil Esposito, Mike Ross are in the slot next, and we'll see you next Thursday at 4 Eastern.
For more podcasts, check out NHL.com. This is NHL Radio.